Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
That was fun. I enjoyed talking about Kit Holmes that last hour. Man, that was really fun. I'm going to have to look into that. What a cool idea. Buy a home and build it. I've always wanted to learn how to do that. I know I'm capable of following instructions, but I know my wife doesn't believe me when I say that. So it would be a tough get. It's so fun to go through an IKEA and look at all of the, you can buy this all, and here's the price tag to buy it all. But instead of just getting a kitchen, you can get the entire home built, and then you bring in whatever you want on top of that. Yeah, it would probably cost similar. If not, just go find a home that's already built. The home I'm in, I'll do my own home repairs. We have the in-laws staying in, but they're leaving tomorrow. They're leaving tomorrow, and they're going to be going back up to Ohio. So once they're gone, we did get a little bit of work done around the house. I got to close the pool. It was about time. So I finally got all of that done. We put the insulation up in the attic. I got a little stuff done in the garage. You know, little stuff here and there. But man, I'm spent from putting in that insulation. I don't have much of a pitch in the attic. So by the time you get up there, I mean, it's like crawling. The only way I can explain it, crawling underneath the kitchen table for the entire length of your home, and then you have to try to stretch out this insulation. We ended up using these broom handles laying in our bellies to try to get this stuff out. But it was a pretty effective way. The hardest part was trying to maneuver the big giant rolls of this, because I put all the rolls up there ahead of time, but it was almost playing Tetris to try to move this stuff around, open it up, roll it out. We did wear protection, which was good. You know, you don't want to mess around with that Pink Panther stuff barehanded and no mask on or anything like that. That would be bad. But we got it up there. I only had like 2 inches of insulation up in the attic. And I was already telling my wife, oh, doesn't it feel better in here already? Oh, it's already, look at that. Well, we don't have to turn the furnace on. It's 40, it's 30 outside. Look at the neighbor's roof. It's frosty. Ah, no furnace. This is great. My wife's not buying it. She's like, oh, she doesn't think insulation will make a difference. Tell me that's not, she just doesn't understand. It's like a guy thing. It's the best money I could have spent before this cold, cold winter. But I love this idea about going out and buying a kit. When I was a kid, we used to take field trips to Henry Ford Museum. I grew up outside Detroit. And inside of this museum, you would build like a tiny home. It would be like a group building activity. So you'd have a couple of different groups. You'd put the walls up, you nail it, and you screw it, and you put this up, and you do this. And the idea was you're supposed to work as a team to build this and accomplish it. Essentially, it was not even a tiny home. It was more like a shed. But it was a really cool idea. And that was a great learning experience. It might have been the first time I ever used like one of those electronic or battery-powered screws. Fun times. But I think that we need more of that for kids, more hands-on, get them in there. Home Depot and Lowe's, I know they do these activities for kids where you can show up. I think they might even do them once a month, or maybe every other month, where you sign it up. It's a really good dad-son activity where you can get out there and you get to build little things and kind of gets them interested in building. My kid loves building stuff too. So I think we're going to do that. My wife signed me up for the next one that's coming up. I just can't remember when it is, but there are some, you know, you get a little apron and everything. The kid loves it, loves it. This last hour, no, I swear I'm not going to just ramble for an hour. There's a couple of other stories I wanted to get to, and there's one from last hour I missed about the St. Louis bride that's out thousands of dollars after this photographer didn't show up. You know how difficult it is to talk to a bride on the day of her wedding? She's got a million things going through her head. She's trying to, you know, she's got to look exactly the way she wants to look. She wants to make sure all the details are working. She wants this to be a very special time. So you don't mess with her. You do whatever the bride says. Now, if you cross the bride on the wedding day, Oh boy, I feel bad for you.
We got married August 18th on a Saturday.
Looking at these photos, Lydia Beischer reflects on the best day of her life.
I wish I could do it again.
But if it wasn't for a friend who stepped in with a camera last minute, these photos wouldn't exist.
Had a hiccup.
Click, click, click. It's almost they Googled stock audio for camera.
With a camera last minute, these photos wouldn't exist.
Had a hiccup with our photographer. She didn't contact us, and then she didn't show up the day of the wedding.
Beischer hired Abigail Marie Photography to shoot her wedding for $2,100. The contract required her to make a down payment of $1,050 and pay the remaining balance a month before her wedding day.
I didn't know what was going to happen.
According to the contract, in the event of an emergency, the photographer would send someone else in her place.
Well, let me guess. She didn't.
But on wedding day, despite calling multiple times, Beischer says nobody showed up.
Oh, I'd be so mad. Oh, our caller from the first hour who watches all those daytime judges, Judge Judy would rip that photographer to shreds. Oh, Judge Judy would have a field day with her.
Didn't know what was going to happen, just waited to see how the day was going to play out.
3 days before her wedding, Beischer still hadn't heard from her, so she posted her frustrations on Facebook. The response was overwhelming.
Brides came out of the woodwork saying that things had happened to them that were similar.
Oh, News 4 spoke with multiple brides who say they experienced the same thing. Others say she did show up, but months later, they still don't have their pictures.
I relate to a lot of these people.
Since August, Beischer says she's tried contacting the photographer multiple times, but can't get a response.
Oh, I'd be so mad. You don't mess with a bride-to-be. Like, here's when she was trying to reach the photographer. Here's actual audio of her trying to reach the photographer.
If you are looking for a ransom, I can tell you I don't have money. I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you.
Yeah, you don't mess with a bride. Ain't that no joke, man. It's something like that. You don't mess with a bride.
An explanation from her.
So we pushed for answers and found the Facebook page associated with the company is no longer available. When we tried calling the number listed, we got this.
The number you dialed is not a working number.
I will find you and I will kill you for trying to ruin my wedding. And I wouldn't blame it. Let's find who that is. I hope they find her. I hope they... You don't want her to kill them, obviously. You don't. I will find you and I will kill you. Okay, that might be a little too far. You might be going a little too far on that. But, you know, finding and making sure the person sued until bankruptcy, that's probably a good idea. Because even if you have a contract for $2,000, $2,100, think about everything else that's lost. Oh, man, I would be suing for the moon. I'm going to get a couple of other stories in. Well, we have time at least. Oh, I also told a caller I got a naked story. She's going to be listening for this one. We'll do that story next. How about a dude that was wakeboarding or something in Australia, naked, runs into a shark. Okay, you want to guess what happens? Yikes. Overnight America, KMOX. Bigger beach song. Da-da. Maybe I was born to surf. 50-year-old surfer. Naked. Off the coast of New South Wales, Australia. Came face to face, or more or less, bare skin to shark. He lived to tell the tale. Tell me that wouldn't be a nightmare scenario. You jump in the water. You purposely don't wear clothes. And you think, boy, that would be terrible if I ran into a shark right now. And it's exactly what happened. Listen to how this presenter in Australia sets it up. This is from Sunrise Live, which is a television program.
Well, a naked swimmer has channeled his surfing hero, Mick Fanning, punching a shark that attacked him while he was swimming.
The suspected bull shark latched onto his arm while he was body surfing.
Latched onto his arm. Man, you really dodged a bullet there. Of all the places to latch onto. He's probably thinking, ooh, boy, let's do arm.
At Samurai Beach, just near Newcastle, it's a well-known nudist spot there.
Oh, nudist spot.
Now, Paul Kenny is, we can happily say, alive and well, and he joins us this morning from his hospital bed in Newcastle.
Clothed, yes, clothed, in case you're wondering.
Well, Paul, good morning to you. Very close shave. I guess you can, I saw it in the news last night, you can laugh about it, but it was pretty serious. What happened?
Well, I was just body surfing and went to catch a wave in and put my head down and headbutted a shark. I didn't know it was a shark to start with. I thought it was the bottom, the sand. And
Wait, you're going to headbutt the sand? So I didn't know it was a shark at first. So just going down to headbutt the bottom. Is that what they do in Australia? Man, they're at a whole different level. I bet they order everything in kits there and they build it themselves. These guys sound like they know what they're doing. The spiders there, the size of dinner plates, they don't even flinch. They give them names. I'm not manly enough to live in Australia. You got the Crocodile Dundee standard that no one could live up to.
Realized I was chest deep and it wasn't the sand. So as soon as I headbutted him, he latched onto my arm.
Huh.
And instantly I knew what was happening. So all I could do was do what Mick Fanning did and just punch him. I just punched him a couple of times until he let go. And then he let go and I grabbed my arm to stop the bleeding, and he was about a meter away, but the water was all churned up, so I couldn't really see. I couldn't see him, just his dorsal fin for a split second.
Wow. So all the water was churned up from his own flesh and blood that fell out after the shark that grabbed onto his arm. How'd you like that? You're just out there swimming naked. Did he say it's only waist deep? Yeah, man. Ugh. See everything. Then he gets out there. He's on his surfboard or whatever. Shark gets him in the arm. And after he headbutts the shark. Now, if I were a shark, I'm just out there minding my own business. There's some dude. Okay, fine, whatever. And then I get headbutted out of nowhere. So the guy purposely thinks he's headbutting the bottom of the water, which doesn't make sense. Who headbutts the bottom? Unless you dive. You know those signs they show you on the edge of a pool, do not dive, because the little stick man gets his head on the bottom, knocks his head. That's what the guy was he knocking in, hitting the bottom with his head, but instead it was a shark. Shark gets angry for being headbutted like anyone else would. If you were headbutted, you'd be angry too. And the thought might cross your mind to bite the person that headbutted you. So the shark bites the guy in the arm. There's blood and flesh, and all you can do is to get the shark bite out, start punching it in the head.
So then I just backed off and just got out of there as quick as I could, caught whatever wave was coming through, and just got out as quick as I could.
So he went back to the surfboarding? Yeah, I got back on my board and kept going. Wow.
You were just saying there, I mean, I guess as we saw in the vision with Mick Fanning, he didn't know which way to look and where the shark was going and moving. Did you have any sense in that churned up water of where the shark was or what you were going to have to do next?
Now, keep in mind, you're nude and you have a bunch of blood and flesh around you and a shark that's angry. Oh, man.
When he was on my arm, I knew exactly where he was. But when he let go, that was the worst bit because I didn't know where he was. I couldn't see where he was coming. And I thought, if he gets my legs, I'm gone. I wouldn't have been able to get out because there's no one else in the water around me. And so that was the worst bit. And not knowing, and the closer I got to shore, the better it felt.
Paul,
how would you like to be this tough? Seriously, if you could be this tough in life, you can do anything. Swim naked, shark. You headbutt a shark, it bites you. You punch it till it goes. You have your blood all around you, and a shark that's angry and could bite again around your naked. Keep in mind the water's like up to his waist. There's only certain places he can latch onto at this point.
Well, Samurai Beach, where you were swimming, is a nudist beach. Were you just trying to have just a quiet, very private swim in a beach that you've wanted to go to for a while, and now the world knows that you swam there at a nudie beach?
Now the world knows you're hanging out at a nudie beach. What a great question by this anchor. Oh, she asked the question that was on everyone's mind.
Yeah, I'd say no comment, but you're right. Yeah, I just wanted to go for a quick swim before breakfast. And now everybody knows I was swimming.
Yep, in the nudie beach. I like how she puts it that way. That was from a program, Sunrise Live, who got a live camera in there. Man, this guy is a true man. And I'm looking at a picture of him. And it looks like, you know, on the when you buy ground beef and on the bottom of the container, they have that little thing. It's not, it's like a strip that's supposed to absorb some of the beef juice. And it's, you pull out, you flop the ground beef off into the pan. And on the bottom, it's just this pad that's absorbed the juice. You throw it away with the container. That's what it looks like is just taped onto his arm where the shark bit. It just looks like one of those pads that they taped on. And it's absorbing or helping. He's 50 years old, enjoying a naked swim when he comes face to face with a shark. And he's probably thankful it was face. Now, if he would have gone anywhere else, yikes. There was a whole other story. Kevin Kleen put one together. You know where you're not going to find sharks? Probably the Mississippi, I'm going to guess. I'm going to guess you're not going to find too many sharks over there.
Well, the jury was in deliberation, so instead I decided to head down to the Mississippi River. I drove down Shoto and got out under the bridge there. The river is very high, and it's running swift, swirling above the levee bricks, and it's almost up to Wharf Street. There was a young man there loading up two portable potties, those bright green potties, on the back of a pickup truck. He said they usually leave them there for people to use, but he was afraid they'd get swept all the way to New Orleans. I noticed also he had a diamond earring, and he told me the portable toilet business has been going gangbusters this summer, but it appears to be tapering off some this fall. I was mesmerized by the river and all the tree trunks in there. There was a 12-foot-long trunk that came slipping past me, and it crunched into a tangle of driftwood that was piled up against the back of a rusty parked barge. I felt sorry for that log, just to think it had come all this way in its career, hundreds of miles, only to get stuck in St. Louis. Well, as long as I had come this far, I decided to walk down the riverfront behind this no trespassing area where construction companies park their trucks. They had all moved them out, I guess, because of the rising water. But I came upon what looked like a homeless encampment. There was nobody there, but there was a hibachi grill, some dry wood in a pile for later, and some chairs. I always used to tell my kids about places like this to make sure they do their homework. If you don't do your Peloponnesian War essay, I'd say you'll end up living down by the river or under a bridge. They'd tell me that sounded pretty good, better than taking a test. I drove up the river past Laclede's Landing. On the far north side of the river, there's a mysterious brick building that always intrigues me. It's Al's Steakhouse, a low-slung thing with no windows. In fact, you could see how they bricked over all the windows, and I wondered who goes in there and what goes on inside Al's Steakhouse. I imagined taking my wife there without a reservation, and then after bluffing our way in, Robert De Niro would come over to our table and ask us what we were doing there. The court case I was supposed to be covering is being put off until later, so I just went back to the newsroom and decided to type up this vital information. With a whole nother story, I'm Kevin Killeen.
Aw, I love Kevin. He's still my favorite. When I hear stories like that, he just can make anything interesting. Just to walk down the Mississippi to kill some time looking for a story. That is a story about looking for a story. That's one of the great whole nother stories, which I got some other ones that I have in the can that we never had a chance to play. Maybe I'll get to do those at some other point. I try to find a way to incorporate them into the topics we're covering. In a few minutes, I wanted to get to this isn't really a political story, but down in Texas, Ted Cruz is going to have a rally with Donald Trump. I couldn't believe how many people signed up for that rally. I should believe, but it's still pretty shocking, all things considered. This guy's filling stadiums, man. And employees are having a hard time hiring because of some of the lax drug laws. We're going to talk about that, too, coming up on Overnight America, KMOX. Back to Overnight America. So let's see. Let me do some quick conversions. Ah, still pretty far away. You're telling me about these earthquakes off of the coastline there. It's pretty far away from Vancouver. It's like 300 miles away from Vancouver. Some strong earthquakes hit. And when you said tsunami warnings, it said less than a foot. And when you say tsunami, I think like building tall story. But this is less than a foot. So it looks like there could be some, because of the earthquakes that hit off the coast over in the Vancouver, north of Seattle area, there could be tsunamis less than a foot. That's not as sexy as thinking about, you know, something that could be really damaging. Like, less than a foot's basically doesn't even make it up the beach line. It's just like, basically the kids are running away from them by the time they get up to the beach line. You got the kids in the swimsuits running away. Ah, and then they run back and ah. That's, I was watching that. So a couple of earthquakes hitting off the coast there. Though the quake may seem large compared to other events, it's far from the biggest, they say. But Port Alice, yeah, about 208 kilometers west of Port Alice, so that's about 300 miles west of Vancouver. No reports of damage, and none would be expected, according to the NRC. So, just earthquakes there. Ben, you scared me. You made it sound like there's a giant tsunami heading towards Vancouver or something. You know, that's not even enough for the news people in Vancouver to wake up for. They'll be like, hey, we got some earthquakes off the coast. Is there any damage? No. Yeah, but there's a tsunami. What? Less than a foot. Oh. Any chance this is going to hurt us? No, not really. Oh, okay. Just don't go swimming naked out there with your boogie board or whatever and hope that sharks stay away from you. All right. Guess how many people signed up for the Trump Cruz rally in Texas. So Ted Cruz running for re-election. Everyone's watching because they felt like that was a seat they could take. I don't think you're flipping Ted Cruz's seat. You're not flipping it over to the Democrat side with Beto O'Rourke. But according to the polls, he still has a healthy lead, but President Trump's still going to go down. The venue that they decided to hold this rally holds 18,000 people. And this is how it works. It's free to go to these rallies, so you have to sign up ahead of time, as in, I'm going to be there, right? You get a little ticket you can print off. They scan it at the door. That's so they don't go over capacity, so they know how many people at least want to get in. Of those 18,000 tickets, 78,000 were requested. 78,000. We're filling like football stadiums. This is for because Donald Trump's showing up. That's amazing. So the president is headed to Houston to ensure there's no surprises. 78,000, that's the number that wanted to show up for that. Wow. And by the way, he pretty much consistently fills up arenas anywhere he goes. When I went to go see him when he was running for the election, I mean, he filled up the arena that we were at. You know, about 10, 11,000, whatever it may be. But 78,000. And it's not that they just showed up. Thousands and thousands wait in line for hours at a chance to get in. Wow. Remember here in Missouri, there was a two-mile-long line in order to see the president? Was that in Springfield? Man, that's amazing. That means something. For everyone out there saying that this guy can't get reelected, look at that. You tell me, 78,000? That's probably more people than Hillary Clinton brought to had show up to rallies combined for this last election. Seriously, she showed up to very few rallies, and even the ones she showed up to were pretty small venues. She was filling like high school basketball arenas. And then remember after the fact, she puts her book out and she's going to Costco's at the toilet paper section to go sign her books. Oh, man. 78,000. You know that eats at them. You really know. Speaking of politics, so Democratic Socialist Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was at a campaign event on Friday saying that the United States is getting a beating for global warming. It needs to use the same blueprint the U.S. used for defeating the Nazis in the 1940s. I'm getting this from the Daily Wire. This is just hysterical, really, if you think about it. So here's the quote. So we talk about external existential threats. The last time we had a really major threat to this country was around World War II. Existential. I know I'm saying that weird. Ocasio-Cortez said, and so we've been here before, and we have a blueprint of doing this before. So wait, so you're saying that to fight global warming, it's like the Nazis? I would love to talk to a World War II veteran that's out. I know they're probably sleeping right now. And if you're alive and you're a World War II veteran, you're an absolute treasure. God bless you. But you're up there. You're probably 95 to 100 years old, hanging in there, just doing your thing. I would love to ask a World War II vet, you know, fighting the Nazis, is that, would you say that's about on par with fighting global warming? You see, so when you were out there, when you stormed Normandy, when you were fighting and liberating and going over and, when you hit those beaches, wait a minute. Did you feel like you were fighting global warming and that was, you said, oh boy, this might be bad, but at least I'm not fighting global warming right now. Oh man. So it says, and what we did was that we chose to mobilize our entire economy and industrialize our entire economy. And we put hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people to work in defending our shores and defending this country. Well, outside of Pearl Harbor, I don't know about you, but the Nazis really didn't bomb Pearl Harbor. It's funny she uses the Nazis for that. I don't think they really made it over here. I mean, they were occupying and taking over territories in Europe and moving across and expanding, sure. But it really wasn't a defend the United States border against the Nazis. Yeah, maybe I'm not a history buff like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Kind of like she is an economy buff, too. It sounds like she's really up on how the economy works and how definitely socialism will just take and just ignite on fire by the time she gets in there. Now, keep in mind, too, this is a great fact that they put in the byline of this article. Ocasio-Cortez did not address the fact that the U.S., a year after pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord, is leading the world in reducing CO2 emissions while many other nations are breaking their promises to reduce emissions. Well, how about that stat line? So we're not in the Paris Accord and we're still the world leader when it comes to reducing CO2 emissions. Isn't that funny? So the whole idea of the Paris Accord and the reason the president pulled out, remember when he was doing this? He said, how come all these other countries can't live up to their promises like the United States is obligated to? We're paying all of this money to try to pay above our obligation just so these other countries could, you know, catch up or whatever it is, and they don't have to play at the same level as the United States. Sure, it's scaled down. Sure, we'll pay the way. We'll pay the ticket in or whatever it may be. And then the United States pulls out. The countries are still not paying up to the promise that they said they would as part of the Paris Accord. And somehow the United States, though through no other obligation of this one treaty or this accord, still finds a way to be the world leader in reducing CO2 emissions. Well, how about that? Isn't that crazy how that works out? For some reason, every time this comes up, that little byline is never said. No one ever brings it up. You can find that one online. That was from the Daily Wire. A couple of other stories I want to get to before we say goodnight. The employees that are potential employees and maybe even employees that already work for certain companies, you may work for one of these companies that have a hard time hiring right now because when they drug test, they don't pass. That's a big problem right now. You're facing it all over. We'll get to that story next. Overnight America, KMOX. This is kind of sad. The economy is doing really well right now. Really, really well. We have employment at unemployment at record low. We have more jobs out there than there are people looking for jobs, and that means the competition's a little bit higher, and that by itself should be driving up some wages, not necessarily moving at a rate that's as fast, I think, as anyone would like it to, but still, things are looking really good. And part of the problem why maybe there's more jobs out there than people to fill them is because employers will find the person they like, and before they bring them on, may give them a drug test, and they fail it. And apparently, this is a major problem. New York City employers are squarely blaming a raging drug epidemic for much of the trouble they have filling the jobs in one of the tightest labor markets in a generation. More local prospective workers are testing positive for substance abuse, showing up stoned for work, according to industry analysts. And even as weed in legalized in some areas, look at Canada, for example, over the weekend, was it? They just legalized it. And all kinds of, and you hear the stories, oh, they're out of it. People will deliver marijuana to your house in Canada now. Congratulations, Canada. You may be listening from up there. This is a very proud moment. But I was reading about the problem that it is when someone goes to apply for a job, and what happens after that? Well, they test positive and they look for someone else. It's not just marijuana, they say. The abuse of hard drugs like cocaine, methamphetamines, they've exploded even further, threatens productivity. This is from the New York Post. Many jobs in the city now take 60 days or more to fill because they try to find someone. They keep failing drug tests. Drug abuse rates overall for workers tested in New York State were at 3.5% in 2017 compared to 3.2% a decade earlier, so slow rise. Their analysts believe there's a direct connection between drug-impaired workers and employers' inability to fill open slots, which I get. Have you ever been drug tested before? Yeah, I had it once. I took a job after college before I found my first radio full-time job. And what I was doing was I was living at home, and I still wanted to work, get some money, make some income. But at the same time, I wanted to find that radio job, and I knew that eventually I'd get one. I had some people interested, but nothing really panned out. And it was very difficult because it was a job where I was a grinder, as in we worked in a shop. You had someone weld these metal chutes together, and then I would go and I'd kind of grind the metal, the welding marks, because the welders weren't all that great. So I'd go and I'd kind of like, you know, soften some of these areas up, and I had this little, I'd do that all day. So you'd show up, it'd be dark, you'd leave, it'd be dark, you'd be there all day. You'd get an hour for lunch, you sit in your car, listen to the radio, and go back in when it's done. Get your earplugs in, do your thing. You just can't mess around in a job like that. Everyone there is, you know, there's no one's real happy. I was making a little bit more than minimum wage, wasn't all that great. No one cared about you. I remember going into the office after I found my first job, and I put in a 2 weeks notice and said, hey, I found another job, 2 weeks notice. I want to put it in. The guy said, no, that's okay. You can just go. Wasn't expecting that. Like, oh, okay. See you later. Bye. That was my last day. Didn't really say goodbye to anyone. You just walk out. Not that you had friends there anyway. Everyone was just kind of doing their own thing. But before that, I had to go take a drug test, and it was really strange. I show up to this clinic or whatever, they pay for it, and they call your name. You go back there and they say, okay, now go in this cup, and we're just going to kind of, you know, keep an eye on you so you're not doing any funny business. So, you know, you're in this little bathroom, there's a toilet there, and you fill the cup, and they just kind of like look at you from the backside to make sure it doesn't look like you're trying to sneak in someone else's urine. And then, you know, you turn it in and that's it. And I had that job not that long, maybe only 3 or 4 months. It really didn't take, but man, it was a miserable job. That was one of my worst ones. That might have been the actual last time I did a real job. Ever since then, it's just been radio. This doesn't really feels like a real job, really. I mean, it is a job. It takes skill. It takes talent to do this sort of thing. It's not something anyone can do. But I'm not out there working with my hands. I think back to when I was on that line just grinding. I feel for it, man. If you're out there doing something like that and you're listening to me in your headphones or something, thank you for doing that. I used to listen to the radio personalities and do the exact same thing, and I know how much that means to be able to distract you from that mindless back and forth that you do all day. And if you maybe by the time the show ends, or maybe it's too early and you're working through the late night and the show's not on yet, you can always download it and listen to it. Give a plug for the podcast here. Just on the Apple Podcast app, search for Overnight America. Or if you don't know, if you have an app on your phone, you can download the radio.com app for free and just search for Overnight America on there. It says, now that the economic considerations of this are real, it is time for a fresh look at what is happening in this area of drug testing. An economist for the American Institute for Economic Research says, today some analysts believe as many as 25% or more of applicants for jobs in New York City have failed drug testing. Yikes, reflecting on a broader national pattern. How frustrating would that be? The economy's doing good. Trump puts these tax cuts in. You as a company may be able to benefit from that. You're able to create more jobs. You want to hire some people. You put it out there. You're like, this is great. Finally, we can expand. We can do this. We can do that. You put the word out. Applicants start coming in. You're like, whoa, a lot of applicants. This is great. You find the ones you like that'll work for the money you can pay. You get them drug tested and they fail. 25% of them. Wow. That seems like such a high number. It's a big issue, a real big issue. They say the changing patterns, geographical variations may challenge the ability of employers to anticipate the drug of choice for the workforce. You don't know what's going to show up there. No-shows at work are starting to turn into a big thing, too. Or staff turning up to the job strung out or high, not uncommon in some of these industries like bars and restaurants. That's a big sector for that. New York's hospitality sector, they say. I guess it shouldn't be par for the course. You shouldn't just be able to accept that sort of thing as taking over and doing its thing. I think that if you did, man, you don't want to bend the rules on this, right? You're like, I need to fill this, so we're going to roll the dice with someone that's going to show up to work high? No, you can't do that, so you just got to keep going. That's pretty tough. All right. I did put together a different podcast for the blog that'll be posted later today. Normally, they post at 10 o'clock Monday morning. You can get them at KMOX.com on the right side of the page. And at KMOX.com, just go to the column sections and you can see them all right there. I talked about that Hyperloop and keyword hype. I feel like there's just too much hype into this sort of thing. You know who else is trying to fight for a Hyperloop is Elon Musk. Listen to a podcast Elon Musk was on. And he basically put a permit in to dig a giant hole. Like anyone could dig a giant hole. You just put a permit in. And now they're going to use it to experiment to try to dig out some of these tunnels. And what he wants to do is tunnel underneath Los Angeles to build this system of high-speed rails so people can get around very quickly and not have to worry about the traffic that's above it. Now, that's a solution for a crazy area like L.A. I don't think I can ever work in a city that large. New York and L.A., where you have to rely on public transportation, lots of walking. You can't get around. Like New York, you don't drive. You take taxi cabs or the subway or whatever it is. Los Angeles, or in that area in California, you drive. You just are expecting that you're going to be stuck in your car for 3 hours a day or whatever it is. So the first tunnel of a proposed underground transportation network across LA County will be open on December 10th. Elon Musk's Boring Company is building this tunnel. He's been trying to do it. And you talk about the Hyperloop between St. Louis and Kansas City. Elon Musk already got it done, man. And it's underground. It's not like they have to go along 70 and take forever to do it. So cheers to Elon Musk. Here is KCAL-TV reporter Greg Mills.
Frustrated drivers.
The traffic above ground is too much.
Fed up with LA traffic, welcome a new option.
I think it is going to help congestion a little bit.
Musk has touted his high-speed Hyperloop underground vision for a few years now. Large pods speeding through tunnels from Long Beach to LAX all the way to Sherman Oaks.
I mean, if it's from here to Sherman Oaks, if I can get there for like 15, 20 minutes, yeah, I'll tell you.
Beyond setting that firm debut date, Musk is staying mum on specifics.
Wow. So it says the carry pods through the tunnels at speeds up to 130 miles an hour. That's fast, isn't it? 130 miles an hour, man. That's something else. Well, that about does it for the show here. I felt like we had a fun show. I want to do some more research on these Menards build-it-yourself homes. That sounds really cool to me. We'll be back again tomorrow after Blues hockey. We'll have some fun tomorrow, too. I already got a couple of different topics. We have a guest on tomorrow from the Pew Research who was researching the different relaxed laws in certain states, including here in Missouri, when it comes to payday loans. And it's real. I really don't like the practice of that. So we're going to bring on someone to talk about that tomorrow, which will be fun. Who knows what else? Might have some other surprises. I think Dr. Knowledge is going to be on with us tomorrow night, too. If you want to reach me in the meantime, at Ryan Recker on Twitter, ryan.recker at kmox.com. Have a great night. We'll see you soon.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.